This is it. The moment we've all been waiting for, everybody. Settle in. Buckle up. It's Halloween Ends.
Oh, it sure the hell is.
So, welcome back to the Creepy Real Horrorcast. I'm Mistress Meg.
I'm that good buddy Lunchbox.
And before we get into any of this, before we even get into the usual podcasty information spiel, there be spoilers ahead.
I'm spoiling the shit out of this damn thing.
If you are going to get mad and butthurt and cranky and whiny and turn into one of those internet neckbeards because we spoiled the movie for you, you should know there are spoilers ahead. We will be spoiling the absolute fuck out of this movie because I don't believe in censoring myself.
Yeah, we are going to be talking about everything that we saw within this movie. So if you have not seen the movie yet,
and you're going to be one of those people,
then you need to just put a little pause on it. Go maybe go venture off into the rest of our catalog and take a little bit of a gander. That'd be nice,
right? Or go see the movie and then come back and listen to us talk about how we felt about the movie. And while you're doing that, subscribe. We'll drop in your favorite podcatcher on Tuesdays. Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher @ Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. We have an email for movie suggestions, creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. And if you want to buy our merch, because we are getting into spooky season, Halloween is just a couple weeks away. Well, not getting into spooky season. Halloween is just a couple weeks away, which means Christmas is upon us. Creepinitreal.redbubble.com for the merchy merch. And I guess on with the show now. Mm-hmm. So
again, if you have not seen the movie, last chance.
Stop now.
We're about to jump in.
All right, we're going in. 3, 2, 1. Spoiler time. Okay, so Halloween.
Dumbledore dies! There! That's what I said. There it is.
Dumbledore died. Stop it. Okay, so Halloween Ends, dropped October 14th, 2022. It was made for a budget of approximately $20 million. This thing also had to deal with COVID delays. It was directed by David Gordon Green. It was written by David Gordon Green, Danny McBride, Paul Brad Logan, and Chris Bernier. Or Bernier?
Bernier.
Would it be Bernier? Yeah.
Sounds better, Bernier.
Bernier.
French that shit up.
Yeah, there you go. We'll just French it up. French it up like crazy. It stars Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie, Andy Matichak as Allison, James Jude Courtney as The Shape, Rowan Campbell as Corey, Will Patton as Frank, Jesse Boyd as Officer Mulaney, Michael Barbary as Terry, Destiny Money as Stacy, Joey Harris as Margot. Oh, we have a one-name wonder. Martine going as Billy.
Mm.
And Karan Harris as Willie the Kid, also returning. Legacy character Kyle Richards as Lindsay.
And we also have our that cute little black kid. The little nasty-ass kid cutting his toenails.
We got a cameo from Jabril Nantambu.
I had to, mention it because, I was so happy to see him. So.
I was weirdly excited to see him, too. It was a pretty interesting one. So, all of the Halloween stans have been out in full force the last few days, raging and screaming and crying and getting all mad, sad in their Wheaties about this movie.
It has been very interesting to kind of venture out into the internet world. It was, because I saw it literally last night. So it was weird because I had to stay off of the internet because of all the people that have actually seen it, or anytime I would search YouTube or whatever, it would always pop up as a recommendation of, here's our review, and it's like, what do we think, and all that other stuff. So it was a little tricky trying to tiptoe around all that, just so I wouldn't, so that way I could actually get my own take on it.
Yeah, there are so many people on IMDb this is the worst movie of the franchise.
And that was one of the things where, on some of the YouTube, after I watched it, I did watch one or two review channels just to kind of see like what their take on it was. And one was the House of Masks. The guy, all his channel is he unboxes masks. Like he has like a whole room full of like Slipknot masks and Halloween. Like, so I mean, he is like an uber fan. Like, he is a diehard Michael fan. And at the end of it, like, it was weird because he was just like, I feel insulted. And it's like, and I was like, oh my God, like, that is,
oh my God, okay, that, so, is
really hard. I was like,
so,
man.
Everybody so far that I've seen is being so dramatic about this. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, we don't really have any sacred cows on this show.
Jaws.
I mean, even Jaws, I won't hold up as, I personally won't hold up as a sacred cow.
Don't touch Jaws.
Because I will criticize the parts that need criticism.
Don't touch Jaws.
Okay. Anyway.
That's my sacred cow. It's Wagyu beef. Don't touch it. No touchy. No touch. No touch the Jaws. Stay away from the Jaws.
Are you done?
Don't touch it. I'm done.
Okay. Great.
But don't touch it.
I hear you. But, okay, I guess Jaws aside, we don't really have any sacred cows on this, in this show. I know me personally, I think I can comfortably speak for you on this. We tend to go in objectively to look at a film as a film, try to judge it on its own merits. And I would like to think that we're going to do that here. Did Halloween Ends have some problems? Oh boy, did it. But is it as big a dumpster fire as a lot of the Halloween stands have been making it out to be? No, it is not. And it always cracks me up that I think what happens, and we'll get into the movie here in just a second, but I think what happens with a lot of fans is they set their expectations so high and they want the thing in their head to be the thing that they see on screen. So when a fan of a series or a book or whatever doesn't get the thing in their head translated onto screen, automatically it's just a piece of trash and there are no redeeming qualities to it, and rabble.
It, like, so that guy that I mentioned where the House of Masks, it's like, his channel is great. Like, it's very entertaining, and I love actually seeing all of his unboxing stuff. So I was actually very curious as to, it's like, you know, what he thought about it. But the opening of his, of that little episode, so there was part one where he does an unboxing of the Halloween Ends mask. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at it, he's like, oh man, this looks awesome. Like, it, like, he's like super excited about it. And then the next video is him literally walking into his room full of Halloween masks, and he's taking a garbage bag and he's picking up each mask and throwing them into the garbage bag and then throws it into the dumpster. He's like, oh, this is, you know, all joking aside, he's like, I am insulted by this movie. And the, he didn't want to go into super details about it because he didn't want to spoil it for anybody else that hasn't seen it, but he wanted to let people know that he was like, this, he's like, I am a Michael fan, and this is not how you do it.
And I think, well, fuck you, first of all. That's not how you do it. Well, guess who put the movie out? Not him.
Yeah.
But for starters, like, and I think that's probably the thing, is if you're a huge fan of Michael Myers, you're going to be real cranky with this one because he's not really in it much. And that's one of my biggest criticisms of it. This is supposed to be the finale of the Laurie and Michael saga. This is supposed to be the final showdown. And the trailers set it up that way. They set it up as the final showdown between Laurie and Michael. And while, yes, we did get that to a point, I don't think we got as much of it as we were hoping to get. I don't think, and while I think that the ending with what happened with Michael was relatively satisfying, I really do, that's one of my biggest issues, is it's like, that was supposed to be the focus of this. And if you remove it from, I guess, like Season of the Witch, if you were to remove it from the Halloween franchise and make it its own thing, I think the movie itself would have been fine. I don't think there's necessarily any issues with it, but one of the, as a writer and as somebody who's been a reader, pretty heavy duty reader, voracious reader since she was 4 years old, you don't introduce new characters and new plot points in the third act.
We, you and me have talked about this many a times, but some of the movies that we really, really just dislike are the final ones. And this one, it made the same sin that you and me have talked about, where it's just, you just threw in this like crazy ass lore that didn't make any sense. However, I think I'm going to defend this one a little bit.
I am too.
And that was the thing, but now I'm happy. Michael now has his weird, twisty last movie. Freddy had his, Jason's got it, now Michael's got it. So it's like...
yeah, I suppose. I don't know. People saying that this is worse than Resurrection, worse than Halloween 5. It's like, sit down, Junior. Come the fuck down. It's not... In terms of storytelling, it was fine. In terms of a script, it wasn't perfect. But I think there were definitely some redeemable elements. I'm mixed on the Corey character. Like, I liked him, but I don't necessarily like that he was introduced in the Zero Hour.
It was, I feel like he was a big mixed bag of nuts. Like, it...
like, I think if...
literally and figuratively.
Like, I think, again, if you removed the Michael Myers element of it, and it was some other killer who was his mentor or something, and this wasn't being touted as the final showdown between Laurie and Michael, I don't think this movie would be getting shat on nearly as much. But we introduced a whole new plot point and a whole new character in the third act of because it's a trilogy. So we have Act 1, which was Halloween 2018. Halloween Kills was Act 2. Halloween Ends is supposed to be Act 3 of a three-act story. And what happened was, like, Act 3 is supposed to be the build-up to the climax, and the tying up of all the loose ends.
Corey should have been introduced in Kills.
I think
not,
so, too.
Not in the third act. Because now, I mean, I get what they were trying, like, well, in a way that they were, what they were trying to do, but it's one of those things where you are now trying to get caught up as to what is ultimately happening, and it's its own story. And that is something where, in comparison to, maybe not as outlandish, because this is definitely grounded, but it's not as outlandish as, like, the Friday the 13th, where it was like Jason goes to hell, or it's like the final, where he ends up being the weird like slug thing,
seen a comparison, that comparison though, because of the scene where Michael had Corey by the throat, mm-hmm. and all of those images flashed.
I have notes on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I heard that, like, I'd read a few comments on there. I was like, oh, it's like Jason goes to hell with that, because it felt like a body jump thing. And I don't think that was the case. No. At all. I really do, but I mean, it was a neat story about watching the creation, the birth, and like the development of a serial killer, or what would have been a serial killer had he survived. Yeah.
I don't know if you caught this or not, but the thing that kind of turned the movie around for me, it was about halfway through, I registered where, like, what they were, or like, I guess like what they were trying to do. This is Halloween 3. This is the concept that John Carpenter wanted for Halloween.
The anthology thing?
Yes. This is it. It's not the Seasons of the Witch. They, like, because John Carpenter wanted to have just a different story that could be told through the Halloween universe. This is it. This is what they were trying to do.
With Season of the Witch, and it didn't work.
No, and that's... Okay. But that's where it's like, now you have... It's not that... It's like, yes, Michael Myers is... is evil, but it's he's the shape. The shape changes. And they kind of did it with...
The last line of the movie with Laurie was, yes, evil doesn't die, it just changes shape. It just changes shape.
And that line made Halloween 4 better for me. That whole scene where Michael grabs Corey in the Ninja Turtles lair that he's into, so he grabs him and looks him in his eye. So if you want to take that back to Halloween, what is it, 4 or 5, when Jamie's like.
That was Halloween 4 with Jamie.
Let me see.
Oh, it was part 5.
I think that was part 5 when she could barely talk or whatever. And it was just... But then there was also the stuff where it's like looking into the eyes of evil kind of like it locks in on you and you become that evil. And that's where I could see during... I mean, the whole weird flashy memory thing, that was a little bit much. But it was, I think, the evil penetrating, or it's like just the essence of evil going off, and the whole thing of Loomis saying that he's got the devil's eyes. It's like staring into the eyes of Michael Myers kind of possesses you in a way. Like it's
that would work, you know, had Corey not done the things he had done prior to that.
No.
And it also would have worked better had this not been advertised as the final showdown between Laurie Strode and Michael Myers.
But that was the thing, was so knowing that, or like having that thought of this is kind of what they're trying to do of building up on the shape and things can change and there's just, it's just the evil incarnate that Loomis has been talking about. Hell, the opening of the movie, the title card opening, the fucking epic, probably the best pumpkin opening ever.
Oh, where they were splitting. Oh my god, it was
so good.
The layers. And did you notice the font?
Yes,
it's Halloween 3 font.
Yeah. That's where I was like, so I started connecting all the pieces where this is just their kind of version of what John Carpenter probably was wanting to do, because now you could literally take those stories and build off of that and make these different killers and do the different shapes of evil. I was like, and they were kind of doing that with the pumpkins, because as the pumpkins were splitting, they were getting like...
There were new faces.
New faces, evil faces, and it just kind of kept on going. And they were spawning that with, in Halloween Kills, with Brackett, of what he said. He's like, oh, we're all becoming the monsters and stuff. In Halloween Ends, it became this thing where...
They picked that thread up.
Yeah, where the town just continued to just have this hatred and this evil.
And they needed a boogeyman.
Yeah.
They needed... Haddonfield at that point needed a boogeyman. They needed to... Because you saw that in some of the reports with some of the people when bad things would happen around town. It's like, they would blame it on Michael. And it was like, it had nothing... It would be a suicide.
Yeah.
Right? Or a robbery or something stupid. I don't remember. I know the suicide was one example that I remember specifically seeing, but there was a couple of other ones in that same montage, and they would be like, oh, this is Michael Myers. And it's like,
well, there was another, so when Corey is being bullied by the fucking band nerds, I'll get into that in a second. But they're standing outside of they're on top of like the little overpass thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
And you can see this billboard, and there's a missing girl, like, picture, and it said, like, missing on October 30th. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm half, tempted to say that maybe Michael has ventured off within the 4 years, and maybe some of it is him. And that's just kind of how he's been kind of staying alive, because as Laurie said, it's the, you know, the more he kills, the more, the stronger he gets or whatever it is, which also they didn't play with in this movie. But that was the thing, is like, I like that there is that idea that maybe it was Michael that was, you know, killing off people, or, and they're making it, it is a boogeyman, or maybe the town is just going absolutely batshit crazy and they just it consumes everything. I mean,
well, and part of it too is Michael was never found, so they did one of the stupid Halloween time jumps where we flash forward the beginning of the movie is a year later after the events of Halloween and Halloween Kills. So we're flashed forward a year. Corey got called on to babysit this shitty little kid. Although, that's a hell of a way to start a movie, though. Dropping some little shit four stories and goes splat.
Yeah, that was... Whoa. Oh, on top of that, one of the things that I loved was the fact that they were watching The Thing, John Carpenter, which Rob Zombie also did, but they were watching the original Thing.
Yeah, they were watching A Thing from Another World.
Yeah, and I think there's another... wasn't it in Halloween 1 they were watching The Thing? I believe is what it was.
Yeah, they were watching A Thing from Another World.
They're A Thing from Another World. Yeah. So like
I think Rob Zombies, they were watching something else.
No, they were watching The Thing from Another World. Okay. Yeah, because it was trying to do some type of like symmetry and
homage-y thing to it.
Yeah, homage.
Well, yeah, the way that the movie started was great. Like, it kicked off with Corey was watching this shitty little kid, and the mom babied him and didn't realize what an absolute asshole her son was. And so the kid plays a prank on Corey, pretends that someone broke into the house. He's screaming for help on the top floor. Corey grabs a knife to go find him and see what's going on to make sure that nobody's actually broken into the house. And this little shit locks him in the attic. And so Corey's freaking out because he doesn't know what's going on. He's supposed to be in charge of this kid. He thinks this kid's being attacked. And then this little butthole from the other side of the door is like, oh, are you scared? Oh, you want to come out? Like taunting him. So Corey's naturally panicking and he's trying to kick the door down, and the kid is standing so close to the door. And the horrible twist of the whole thing is, it's kind of like Helen and I Know What You Did Last Summer, where you're so close to safety. The parents had pulled into the driveway and everything else while this was going on. They're coming inside, and Corey gets one last kick to the door.
Oh, and the mom hears, I'm going to kill you, little kid, like you little shit. And all of a sudden, doof!
And she hears, and the door goes slam and knocks the kid in the head. And there's enough time before he hits the floor for the mom to go, what was that?
Yeah, and you can hear the whistle down where the whoom, and then the thwack, like it's just, and you can see the body bouncing off of the floor.
And the basically an internal decapitation at that point. I don't think the head was really attached to the neck anymore.
Yeah, it was
attached by skin, but not by bone.
It was so like
I had never rooted. I don't typically root for kids to die in things, but I wasn't mad at that one.
It was very heartbreaking. It was more of like it was very shocking, but then when the mom looks up and sees Corey and she's, you know, screaming like, "What did you do? What have you done?" and Corey's holding the knife, just staring down. It's very reminiscent of young Michael just standing there with the knife and just kind of dumbfounded as to what he just did with his sister.
And I like that sort of kicks off the arc, and then you start getting into the questions of nature versus nurture and all of those things. And I think in Corey's case, it was a full-on nurture situation because it was an accident. It was a horrible accident. And Lord knows he felt guilty enough, but word spread around town, especially after a trial and everything else, and he got off because it was deemed an accident. And but he's still treated as the villain because Haddonfield needs a boogeyman. Yeah. And so they vilify this poor kid. And he's carrying that weight around, and so eventually it just gets to the point where you're called the villain enough, you eventually turn into one. Or so it would seem, anyway. He does start to follow a serial killer profile pretty hard as we start moving through the movie. But did you notice this, and maybe, I don't think it was just me, I'm pretty sure somebody else had to have seen this. Everybody in Haddonfield, except for, like, Frank, is an absolute asshole.
Yes.
Everybody but Hawkins is a dick in Lindsay.
In Lindsay, yeah.
They are so shitty. Why does everybody have to be completely unlikable?
Yeah, and that's where I feel like it's the... Because Michael was never taken, it's the evil is just kind of radiated off into Haddonfield.
Like a cancer.
Yeah, and that's where it's just because that whole thing of in Halloween Kills where they kill that inmate or they, you know, he jumps to his death and they kind of have this realization like, oh shit, like it's us that are the monsters.
But even still then, you get the comment from Brackett about look what Michael has done to us. Nobody's taking responsibility.
No.
For anything.
But that's where it's the thing of... It's just people are just going to be nasty. And I mean, think like in this day and age now, I mean, how many times, like, I mean, you could just walk down the street and it's like, people are just going to be a complete and utter douchebag to you. And it's like, there's absolutely no reason for it. Yes, granted, like, that's not going to happen all the time. But I mean, there's just people that are just that negative or just that unhappy in their lives or has
something
so something so bad in their life has caused it them so much pain that they have to put it out onto other people.
Yeah.
And that one scene, it was super, super heartbreaking, but also very, very interesting. So when Lori is coming out of the grocery store and she after seeing Frank
with
and
flirting with Frank and it was cute.
So cute.
It was adorable.
But and like she was so happy and she was just all like on air and like she's you know getting her life like she's just like it feels good. And like for once in her life she actually feels good. And then she comes out and like this black lady turned around and she's like, why are you smiling? Like why are you so happy? You shouldn't be so happy and like and she turned around and she's like it's like she almost died.
And it was Lori's fault.
Yeah, and she's like, and it's your fault that he did it. And I was just like...
And Lori was blamed for provoking the monster.
But that was the lady from Halloween Kills that got the...
that was Sandra. That was her sister.
Yeah, so I was like, that was... It's so good.
And Curtis and I were sitting there, we went to the theater Thursday night and saw this. And I was looking, watching this, and I'm like, how the fuck did she survive that light tube? How?
I would have felt like she just bled right the fuck out because that was a big wound.
And even if she didn't bleed out, the mercury poisoning should have got her.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for that woman to be alive.
But I love that they were like, oh, it's like, you know, she can't talk and it's like she's living in pain and you're just sitting around going around like just having a good old time. And I'm like, that's the thing like where in Rob Zombie's Halloween where they're blaming Loomis for the monster. And I was like, no, Loomis didn't unleash, like, Michael is Michael. You can't blame anybody for it. You could blame Loomis for trying to profiteer off of it.
Oh, yeah.
In Rob Zombie's thing. But he was not the cause.
If you're going to be mad at him, be mad at him for the right reason.
Yeah, it's like, Lori is a victim. She didn't do anything. It's like...
But that makes me wonder, because the Sandra's sister said that she provoked and tempted Michael. Which is absolute bullshit. Like, that is 100% shit. Because Lori was prepared for Michael, but it's not like she brought him out unless she was the one who actually caused the bus crash. There, it's hinted that Lori might have caused the bus crash.
Like, trying to wreck the bus so that it kills Michael?
No, so that Michael would get out so she could kill him. Finally get her hands on it. There was a scene that was deleted that alluded to Lori because she was there watching the bus pull away. She was drinking the little airplane bottles of booze.
Yeah.
And in the 2018 movie. And she was watching the bus and you saw her scream at one point. And there's a figure, if you look through because the way the camera's basically in the passenger seat looking at Lori.
Yeah,
and
I remember
see
that.
Out the driver's window. There's a figure in the background. You don't know for sure if it's Michael, but it may or may not be Michael Myers. Ooh. And so are they alluding to maybe Lori was the one that caused the bus crash after all, and it wasn't Sartain?
I don't know. I almost feel like I like it better as it being Sartain, because Sartain was the one to orchestrate everything for Halloween 18. So it's... I don't think Lori was...
It wasn't 100% clear as to whether or not she was fully innocent in that.
But in that case, like, by the way that she was playing it in Halloween Ends, it felt very much just that, where she's like, I'm being blamed for something I didn't do. And it was...
But she wore the blame. She took it.
She did. Because, like, she's...
Which makes no sense.
She's a pro at it. Because that's what she's been... She's blamed herself. She blamed herself at the end of Halloween Kills, where she's like, this is my fault. I did this. And then Frank was like, no, you didn't. Like,
how?
This is my fault. And so she's been carrying this blame forever, so she's a pro at it. And when she sees Corey getting taunted and bullied by the band kids with a fucking mullet...
I'm not gonna lie, as a barber, that was a pretty sweet mullet.
So, I don't understand how that is a thing anymore, but whatever.
It's the baseball players.
I don't understand it. I mean, I'm a hockey player, and I've seen many a mullet. Some luscious, luscious mullets.
Yarmer
Yager. Yeah, oh, yummy.
His was...
Yummy, yummy. But that was the thing was... So, when Corey's getting bullied by the band nerds, and she comes across... Like, I think she automatically saw herself in that, because that's how she's been treated. And...
She took pity on him, especially because he was injured.
Yeah, and then it kind of evolved into that where it was, oh no, that's a monster. It's not something similar. It's something worse. And now she had to like protect. And it was goes back into the survival. And that was something that I wasn't 100% on. It was clunky.
That was clunky as fuck.
Yeah.
That and the whole the romance with Allison was pretty... Whew. That was a bit much. I am mixed on the romance part of it, though. There's a small part of me that was kind of like... Okay. Well, I guess... Allison needed the new boyfriend for some reason, and I see what Lori was trying to do and do something cute, because Allison had just been working and helping her out since her parents died 4 years before. But on the flip side of it, it felt so rushed, and it felt so unnatural to the story.
It's too convenient. Like, it was just... It was weird because it was Lori just... Okay, so Lori, in the past 4 years, has decided that now that Michael is come and gone, and she's healed, she's taken upon herself to do that with her life. She went and bought a house.
Well, she became a human.
Yeah, and it's like, and she is just living and... being happy, and it's just there was no problem. It's like she's dealt with just all the 40 years of just pain and torture, and so for once she's actually able to have just that normal life
and enjoyment.
And I think that she was trying to keep that going for Allison, even though like there were times where they had that, you know, that memory of what that troubled past was. Like when Lori gave Allison the necklace with her parents' wedding rings.
Yeah.
I was like, that is very, very sweet.
It is, but why'd she wait 4 years to give it to her?
Yeah, exactly. And so...
Like, you'd think that would have been something done within the first year, maybe.
Yeah, but... and there was the one scene where Lori's carving a pumpkin, and they're, you know, going to make pumpkin pie and all the other stuff, and she makes that really funny line where it's just like, you know, you just got to meet that someone that's just going to make you just want to get out there and just show your tits, and it's just like, whoa! Like, that, like...
Lori... Lori was a mess. I appreciated that she still wasn't the struggling survivor with PTSD. I appreciate the fact that they were trying to move her along and make her learn how to be a real human again and all that other stuff. I appreciated that was a thing, but the inconsistency really got to me. Like, in a very short span of time, and I get it, like, she introduced Corey because she thought he was cute and like seemed nice enough, let's introduce him to the granddaughter. But then very quickly. Like, this movie only takes place in the span of, I think, less than a week.
It's something...
It's real short.
Yeah, very short.
The time frame on this. And then, very quickly, then she does the digging around and realizes that, oh no, maybe Corey is bad news and you shouldn't be around Allison and all this other stuff.
And that was the funny thing was, is like, so when she does that, like, cutesy, like, oh, I just thought you guys would, you know, hit it off, and it's just your typical...
But when she goes and confronts Corey at the mansion... where he was sleeping on the bloodstain, by the way. We'll get into that in a second. But she confronts him at the mansion and tells him to stay away from Allison, and she's not equipped to deal with the relationship with him. And he turns around and he's like, you did this! Introduced us!
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Lori, what the fuck? I mean, he said everything the audience was thinking.
Yeah, and at then, that point. And then, like, then he went full-blown batshit crazy and did that whole thing of, if I can't have her, no one can. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's so typical villain. Like,
It was this the weird controlling boyfriend thing, but they didn't flesh any of that out enough. Like, he never, at least for me, he didn't seem like a threat to Allison at all.
Yeah. So,
normally when someone says something like that, if I can't have her, no one can, that means that the partner is the one in trouble.
Yeah.
Not everyone else around her.
Yeah. And so, the thing that I was mixed on Corey because I felt like there should have been a Korn song behind this fucking kid. Like, he just, that, you know, troubled past and the world's against me and it's just, I'm a freak on a leash and blah, 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 all that good shit. So, when we first meet Corey... super stand-up kid, like, he's
getting ready to go to engineering school,
like, which is crazy cool, like, it's like, that's really interesting. And then on top of that, the family that he's babysitting for, he also cuts their grass and he's their little lawn. It's like, he's a well-rounded kid, and when the accident happens, it breaks him immensely, which it should, because somebody died because of him. Yes, it was an accident, but now he's being blamed and he's being now labeled as the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. Along with that, it's also affecting his family. His mom has now become that just that very controlling parent. Kind of it gave me some flashbacks to, like, Carrie.
A bit, although I would say she strikes me as being the kind of woman who's always been that way. Yeah. She's always been controlling, she's always been abusive, she was a smother.
Definitely a smother.
Because when Lori popped by to meet her and say, you know, he's kind of been seeing my granddaughter, and she goes, your granddaughter should be so lucky to have a boy like Corey, he's sweet and he's sensitive, and she's just barking at Lori.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so we're a little... I was like, okay, Mrs. Kasparek.
However, the dad was fucking awesome. I was actually very upset when he died.
He seemed like a good dude, but he was complicit in the abuse. Because he didn't do anything to stop her or get Corey out of there.
It was one of those, like, there was the thing where she starts, like, chirping on Corey and just giving him the business and... Or it's from being out or going out with a girl and all this other stuff, and then the mom walks away. The dad goes, "Don't tell her about the motorcycle. It's like, for the love of God, don't do it."
Well, because she said, "You know, boys who keep secrets don't get custard for dessert." And I'm like, "Okay, he's 25.
Yeah,
what happened? Like, this is Eddie Kasparek.
Yeah, 100%." I am so happy that you thought of that, because that was my next line. I was gonna mention that.
Well, I even said that. I said that before when she was talking to Lori about, you know, the whole he's sweet and sensitive thing, and I was like, okay, Mrs. Kasparek, you didn't hear me say that?
No, like the Eddie thing. Like, it was, I got that, but it was just the, like, he is Eddie. Like, that is,
like, he's forcefully been sheltered. Yeah. He's the only child in, and I think especially after the accident and the court case and everything else, like, she doubled down on that because the entire town of Haddonfield turned on her son. So she became extra, but I really think she's been like that the entire time. Because people don't just turn into that.
Yeah.
They were already like that, and something made them worse.
I think it just cranked her up to, like, 15.
Seriously.
Well, that was the thing, was, like, for Corey, though...
I couldn't stand her.
Yeah, no, for Corey, it was weird because you felt bad for him. Because you knew that, he wasn't the one to do it, and he's been pinned as this boogeyman. And parts of me was, I could see where it's, okay, you want me to be the monster? Fine, I'll be the monster. And it kind of spawned into that. However, I get the whole serial killer thing where, because, like, the stuff where, like, he would be with Allison and they were... He felt very lovey, he felt like a boyfriend. But then there was time, when that cop at the diner showed up.
Doug?
When Doug at the diner came in and Corey kind of snapped at him.
And rightfully so.
Oh, 100%.
He was pushy. Doug was pushing Allison. He wouldn't go away. She was clearly with another dude.
Yeah.
Doug is not her boyfriend. They'd been out on a few dates. Like, he pulled her over just to tell her, oh, you're pretty. And, like, inconveniencing her day. Like, buddy, take a hint.
Yeah.
She is not interested. And, like, she's trying to be nice about it, which, sidebar, we as women need to fucking stop doing that with men. If you're not interested, just fucking tell them. And then hopefully they go away at that point. There's no mixed signals. It's like, nah, dude, not interested. And then we don't talk to them ever again. But anyway, I digress. Doug wouldn't take a hint at the diner, and then he's still offering her to, you know, hey, come over, and it's my buddy's birthday, and we've got a cake and all this other stuff, and come over and have some, and, like, acting like Corey wasn't even there.
Yeah.
I'd have been pissed, too. Oh, I'd have told him to go fuck himself.
I'm not saying that it was wrong, but, like, he would have that type of snapping, just that anger, and he would do that, and you could see it in his eyes where he was just done. He was just done being bullied, and he was done being picked on, and it's just that, I'm gonna say it's the Columbine thing. It's the whole thing of, I'm being pushed so far that, fine, I'm gonna be the monster now.
You're painting me to be anyway.
Yeah, and like when the band kids, I keep bringing them up, fucking douche nozzles. When they keep picking on him, and then, like, when they're over on the bridge.
And it all started because he said, no, I'm not going to buy you underage motherfuckers a beer.
Yeah. And then,
And then they have the nerve to get all mad about it.
Yeah, and then it causes, like, this war because he starts to damage the kid's car and all this other stuff, and then
Lori started that. She encouraged that.
Yes.
She's like, hands him the knife and is like, let's slash their tires. That was kind of Lori.
Yeah. But it was a thing of Corey. He was, you could see the anger and you could see where he wanted to defend himself, but he never,
he
didn't want people to think of him as that type of person. Even though they were painting him as that way.
Well, he was trying hard to maintain the reputation he had before the kid died.
Yeah, and then, but it just was, so he's like, he just gave it a big old fuck it and just heaved it right off the side of the cliff, and then that was about it.
Yeah, there was that, and then, but it was kind of interesting from a psychological perspective to watch him spiral. Like, that was really interesting to see. The problem came is because this was a Halloween movie, the expectation was Michael Myers was going to be in it. Michael Myers got like 10 minutes of screen time. And then they tried to cram this romance in that went hot, heavy, and intense. And then, like, the other part that I didn't get was how quickly Allison got into him. Like, does she have a killer kink or something that she needs to tell the rest of the class? Because even though he literally took her to the mansion where the kid died, the kid got killed, and, like, she's trying to sleep with him after. Like, girl, what? what's pushing your buttons here? Because I don't think that's healthy, and I think we need to go talk to somebody.
I think it was because of just that whole, like, she explains it as, I know that you're hurt, and I know that you have a story.
Do you think it's because he was finally, like, open and vulnerable and told her?
Yes. I think that was a thing of, because everyone knows her. Everyone knows that she is the survivor of Michael Myers. Like, everyone knows her story. But I think she's also...
But it's weird, because she offered to try to help at the Halloween party, and he ran into the kid's mom again. And he got upset, naturally, because she was calling him a killer in front of a room full of people. And he finally was cutting loose for the first time in 3 years. But, like, she's like, I just wanted to help you. And he looks at her square in the face and screams at her, I'm not your project. Which, honestly, like, I would feel pretty shitty about it, too, if someone was treating me as their fixer-upper. Like, get the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah, and that's where it's... I don't think Allison was really meaning it to be that way. It was just a...
But she doesn't know him.
No, and that's where it's... She's trying to get him to open up, and she could see, like, how just insecure this boy is, and just having this, like, super pretty girl just out of nowhere just actually have an interest in him, and...
He's not a boy. He's in his mid-20s. He's a grown-ass man. Let's stop calling him a kid, because he's not... I mean, he's a kid to us, because we're pushing 40, but, like, he's a grown man.
I do that a lot, though. So, I call everyone that's younger than me a kid now.
Yeah, because
I'm at the old man days. But, so that's the thing is, with Allison, I think it was because she saw how troubled he was, and she could understand where he was coming from, it was easier to, I guess, connect with somebody like that where she doesn't want to socialize. She doesn't want to be a part of Haddonfield. She doesn't want to just be in the norm. And so now she found someone that is also just as broken. And the fact that...
So they're trauma bonding?
In a yes.
That has to be it. There's no other reason for that to be that hot and heavy that fast.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think because he latched on to her finally, especially like after that weird little scene where he's standing outside of the bush kind of doing that is Michael Myers thing and Lori sees him.
I was not a fan of that.
Yeah, it was...
Corey can teleport.
Yeah, and so...
You got the Michael Myers teleportation powers.
So that whole thing where it kind of gave Lori the willies and the uneasy feeling, it was a weird dynamic where you could see the negative from him and get the uneasy feeling from Lori, but then have this, no, I care about him from... So you're getting three different... components mashed into one, and it's a very trippy little scene just to have, just because you're getting that, no, but I love him, like, don't tell me what to do, mom, I'm my own woman, and then...
Which is all fine and dandy, and I mean...
You're getting that kind of story out of Allison.
But what's interesting was Allison calling Lori out for... telling her the truth. It's like, you're the one who's obsessed with death, and you're not going to stop until you take everyone else down with you. And this is you. You're the one who's obsessed with Michael. You're blah, blah, blah. And like that, they had that little interaction when Allison was packing to go with Corey. And because the whole thing was like, let's just fucking leave Haddonfield. Let's get the fuck out of here. And I understand that point of view. It's like, we've had nothing... For the last several years, neither of us has had a particularly excellent experience. And even Allison can date back even further because her grandmother was Laurie Strode. And her mom, she had to deal with all of the issues with her mom and her grandmother being, not being able to see Laurie and all this other stuff. I feel like there was two different movies here kind of crammed together.
A little bit.
I think the Corey story was a cool one to explore because it had a very, remember that Mark Wahlberg, Reese Witherspoon movie from the 90s? I think it was Fear.
Yeah.
where Mark Wahlberg played the stalker boyfriend. It had a fear quality to it that I think would have been really interesting to explore on its own.
But that's where I was talking about how this is kind of what I felt John Carpenter would want as far as continuing on a Halloween style movie, where it's you, like Corey, it's like if this had nothing to do with Michael Myers at all,
it would have been fine.
This movie would have been great. It's like it would have been able to pick it up and just run with it. But yeah,
I feel like at some point one of the writers was watching Riverdale and went, let's do that.
Yeah. So it's, I feel like it's, it, Corey definitely felt a little clunky to me. It was too much back and forth, but the thing that really kind of threw me off a lot was the fucking Batman and Robin shenanigans at the doctor's house.
Yeah, so I was trying to figure out if this was supposed to be, like, Corey became Michael's sidekick, or if this was, like, a mentor program between the two of them. Because Michael let him go. Michael let Corey go. And I guess to Corey that meant something, because Michael doesn't fucking let anybody go. But let's remember that Michael is now in his 60s. He had wounds that didn't heal. He had the crap kicked out of him. Like, he was beaten half to death at the end of Halloween Kills. He was shot multiple times. He'd been stabbed with a pitchfork. Like, he'd had some shit go on just a few years before, and he's not as quite as young and spry as he used to be. And it's not like he was carted off to Smith's Grove where people treated his injuries before they locked him up. Like, he'd been living rough for 4 years at that point. And I don't think his injuries healed correctly. He had a bit of a limp. He was a lot weaker than he used to be. So he had that going for him, and on top of it, for some reason, decided to let Corey go. What that reason is, we are not privy to. It was never explained. I guess Corey in some way felt that maybe he was chosen to be spared, that maybe Michael saw something in him. I'm not 100% sure, and frankly, like, that was handled fairly clumsily as well. It really didn't do well at all.
Yeah, I mean, compared to any other person that Michael Myers has come into contact with, they fucking got.
All survivors that came across Michael Myers were survivors because they either outsmarted him or got lucky.
Yeah. And so when Corey goes, I want you to show me how to do it.
And then he drags Doug down there.
Yeah, and
also, fucking Doug had no business following Corey anywhere. What the fuck?
Yeah. So that whole thing of having, like, it's basically feeding Michael is what it was. Sure. Because when Doug gets down there, it's not Michael that stops him. It's Corey that takes down Doug and then gets him to a point where Michael can then scoot on over and then give him a good, you know, bunch of stabbings, while Corey literally watches him, you know, get stabbed. Yeah. and he's kind of accustomed to that. So I was like, in a weird way, it's like, I think that's kind of, it's cool, because after he stabs Doug, you could definitely see Michael kind of get a little bit more pep, and he stands upright, and he's a little bit more himself.
Yeah, for being injured and malnourished, he's doing great.
The thing that kills me about this, it was 40 minutes until we got to see Michael. Mm-hmm. 40. Mm-hmm. We didn't get an ounce of Michael until 40 minutes. And then when we first see him, he's decrepit and he's withered. Weak. And it's not at all what they were kind of boasting up in Halloween Kills. Granted, yes, it's 4 years later.
Also, we were even suggested with the trailers.
Yeah.
That's not at all what was suggested in the trailers.
No, this is literally old man Michael.
Being old.
It's
And worn out.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to bring out, you know, to flip out his little walker with the tennis balls at the end of it.
His pillbox?
Yeah, it's like, all of that. It's like, it was just very, it was very odd to see. But then when he, like I said, when he, after he stabs Doug a couple times and he gets his groove back, you can see him just stand up and he's the shape again. Like, and that's kind of what I felt Lori was staying, was that, you know, it's like, with each kill, it's like...
Ric Flair and needed to get his confidence back.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, it's just, he kind of boasted up a little bit more. And then when Corey, he wanted to seek revenge on the people that hurt Allison and hurt himself as well. Like, he, again, that is, it was just that, you know, pissed off, you know, high school teen that's been, you know, bullied. It's just him just out, seeking out revenge. So he goes after the doctor and the chick that he just promoted, who he's sleeping with. And which is
who kept calling him Dr. Mathis. Yeah. If you're sleeping with somebody, you're using their first name, by the way.
Exactly.
Is that what she's calling out in bed? When she's faking her orgasm? Oh, Dr. Mathis. Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
Like, probably.
Ugh.
So that was the thing, was that whole scene was very good and iconic. However, the fucking scarecrow mask...
Silly.
I get that it's supposed to be kind of a reminiscence of that old clown mask that he had, but it's just like, it didn't... I was like, just, he needed to have something different. If it was maybe just an actual scarecrow mask, like a big, like rubber mask, like what Michael had, maybe that would have been cool, because then you could...
No, it's a vacuum plastic...
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, that would be something where, and this is going from like a marketing standpoint, where it's like, you could get like a good rubber mask, and now you can market that, like, I'm talking like in our actual world, you could market that as its own mask, and then you sell it off, and that would be really cool. But it was just one of those things where it just felt very goofy. Now, there were a lot of like...
I don't know, that weirdly worked for me.
I don't know, it was just that... It just felt a little off. That's all it was. But when he started like, or when the girl came out and she saw that Corey had like a weird, like hold on the doctor, but he was like stabbing him with the corkscrew, very reminiscent to, what was it, Halloween H2O with the nerd kid looking for the wine bottle opener corkscrew,
Or Crispin Glover, Friday Part 4.
Crispin...
Ted, where the hell's the corkscrew?
Oh, God. but yeah, so he's, you know, stabbing the guy with the corkscrew, and then he goes after the girl, she gets away. And then that's where I was saying, like, it kind of felt like a very Batman and Robin kind of deal, where Michael opens up the other thing. And then
we get
the absolute best... The pristine execution
of
decorating.
Yeah.
Because it's actually on art.
Yeah.
Like, he pins her to a painting. It's like, and then he does the head tilt and he's just looking. I was like, oh my God, just the apex decorator. Like,
strikes again.
Oh, so good.
So when we were in the theater, we were in the theater for a Thursday night showing, and we were one of two couples in the theater for this one. And so we're in the back row watching it, and there's a couple that's sitting down like a few rows in front of us. And Curtis is sitting there, and he's like, do it, 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 do it. Like, he's like, come on, come on, please do the thing. And so when he stabs her with the knife and manages to pin her to the wall, Curtis starts cheering. When we were leaving the theater, he's like, you think they heard me? And I'm like, probably. I'm pretty sure the concession stand heard you. He was cheering about that. I was like, really? Again? We're getting the pin to the wall kill again? I don't know. I'm just tired of it at this point.
I'm actually kind of surprised that you guys didn't leave during the probably, what, the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie.
There was actually a point during the second act where I started getting really frustrated.
Really?
I was getting super.
Oh, I was actually frustrated. I was making a joke because Allison works in a hospital. They make it back to a hospital again.
I know. They do it in every Halloween movie. Actually, I let that one slide because it was an urgent care center. It's a Philly.
It's a medical thing. She's like,
she's a nurse. I know she's a nurse. I know. But I was like, I'm going to let this slide because nobody's actually admitted to a hospital. She's a nurse at an urgent care. Fine. Then, I'm going to overlook it. And we didn't spend a whole lot of time there. You're right.
But they did. They do it in every Halloween. There's some type of medical thing.
Why are we in a goddamn hospital again? Because Megan hates it. That's why we're Because Megan hates it. So I got...
But what made you frustrated? They weren't
romance stuff.
Oh, the romance. Okay, okay.
There was a point there where like I leaned forward and I had my hands on my knees and my head, my face in my hands, and I'm just watching this thing. And I think it was when we had the radio station. I think that where that was. It was something.
Oh, where they were up on top
on the roof or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there. I'm getting and I could feel it. I'm getting super super frustrated, like because it wasn't. It wasn't what I thought it was. I really think the trailers were super misleading. I'm just gonna be cut and dry about that. Like they were super misleading.
That line that it was very. So you remember that scene in? I believe it was. It was in Star Wars with Harrison Ford and when Arabs doing the Kylo Ren thing. What movie was that?
Oh, it was on The Force Awakens.
Force Awakens, thank you. So in Force Awakens, when Han Solo confronts Kylo Ren, and it's that very, like, on the nose where the light starts to dim, and it's, like, sinking down, and all
and
of a sudden...
And it goes dark, and then Kylo... And I was like, wow, way to be super ham-fisted about it, guys.
Well, that one, there was a line that Allison gives, like, so... Corey is talking about how this is that the one place that he can always go just to kind of get away. He doesn't have to deal with anybody's bullshit. It's just that's a safe spot is up on top of this radio station, which is interesting choice. But Allison's looking at his hand as he's talking and kind of ignoring him. Like, she's not really engaging in what he's actually saying, but she looks at his hands and she goes, oh, it's infected. And that whole thing of the infection, it's too on the nose because it's like he's basically telling her that this is, like you could tell, like, something's happening. And the fact that he's infected is... It's that's where the story really just kind of just takes it and just runs in that's you know psycho direction.
Yeah.
It because like right after he jumps off the roof, the radio DJ comes out and gives him a bunch of shit
about it being private property. Bro, he's on a sidewalk.
Well, he's like, oh, this all because they're doing something on the building or whatever, but he's like, and then he starts going on about how, oh, I know exactly who you two are, and then continues to give them shit and kind of making fun of them.
Another shitty human
again
in Haddonfield.
Yeah. And so that's where
I started to get, I could feel the frustration where I'm like, what are we fucking doing here?
Yeah.
Although something in the radio station did make me smile when we went back. Remember the blonde? The
I totally know exactly
what it is. It's Darcy, the mailroom girl from Joe Bob Briggs.
I saw it. I was like, in the theater. I'll get to my theaters. I'm telling you my theater story. But I'm sitting in the theater. I went, ha! Yeah! Like, pretty loud. No one else did. And there was just kind of like, huh? Like, no, I don't get it. Darcy, the mail girl. I was happy to see
from
Darcy.
Joe Bob Briggs, and I was like, sweet. I was like, you know what? I'll take it.
Yeah.
It was good to see her. It was weird. It took me a second, though, with the blonde wig. I was like, what?
Yeah. I heard that she was going to be in it. I just didn't see where or who she was going to be. And then I was like, oh, that's awesome.
She had and she had a line, too. So she just had a little bit of a speaking part before she got murdered.
So, but that was a cool thing. And now, granted, when things started actually going into that psycho killer area.
Getting into the third act, I started getting into it a lot more.
Yeah. I was just like, I'm with this. Like, I could deal with this Batman and Robin, you know, shenanigans, just because it's like he really took it upon himself to be the Shape. And the whole thing with the fucking band nerds. So they end up going back to the junkyard looking for Corey and what have you, because he wrote...
Because he set the trap.
Yeah, because he wrote, like, was it psycho, or what did he write on the top of the car?
Yeah, he ground the word psycho into the hood of the kid's car.
Yeah, and so they chased him over to the junkyard, which, again, how fucking convenient is it that he works in a place where he can get a Michael Myers jumpsuit? Like, he can get suit.
I'll allow it.
I know, but it's...
Because he already owned one.
Yeah. So, but it's just, it's like, oh, it's like, he's pretending. It's so cute.
Oh, yeah, it's real cute when he runs a girl down with a fucking tomater.
Yeah. So, the kills that he acquired onto those kids were fucking... sweet.
Yeah, so a couple of those were some of the best kills in the movie, which didn't have a ton. Compared to the body count of Halloween Kills, which, holy bananas, I think they had the highest or second highest, was the first, I think it had the highest body count of the series.
Yep.
This one was much more selective in the kills, and they were committed, and it wasn't just Michael committing them. Michael only committed a couple of them. Corey did most of them, and then...
Michael got three,
but even the kid that the ringleader of that high school group, he even got one.
Yep.
He killed Corey's dad.
Yeah.
He put a bullet in his head.
So, yeah, Corey's dad...
It was an accident, yeah, but he did it.
Corey's dad handed him a shotgun, and, you know, for protection, because the leader of the band nerds was, like, freaking out, you know, screaming for help. And so then Corey's dad goes out there.
He wanted to play Mr. Tough Guy.
Yeah, and so then Corey has got the mask off, and he's standing there, and then Corey's dad looks over, sees the kid pointing the gun, and then out of nowhere, you just get in the shot. Corey's dad stands up, and then boom, takes one straight in the middle of the head.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bummed. I was like, oh, man, that really sucks.
The only likable character in the entire movie takes one in the head.
Yeah. And on top of that, again, yeah, Corey's got his teleportation powers because his dad gets shot and then he's gone.
When the body drops, Corey's not behind him anymore.
Yeah, he's gone. And I was like, okay, so I like that there was the Shape thing. But then after the leader of the group gets taken out, it is so satisfying. Because he fucking takes a blowtorch and cooks that fucker's face. And you can hear the screaming and the sizzling, and it's just
like...
He
didn't just cook his face. He pointed the flame down his throat.
Oh, so good.
He held his mouth open and put the fire in the mouth. So essentially what he was doing was cauterizing everything in the back of the throat. And because fire requires oxygen to... work as fuel.
Yeah.
He was essentially suffocating him while he was doing it because the flame was stealing all the oxygen out of the air around it and out of his lungs.
Oh, so good.
So, like, his body probably went into shock before it died, but I don't think it died much longer after that. And then poor Margot. I say poor Margot because there were moments where she's like, come on, guys, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? And yet she did nothing to stop them, nor did she end up walking away from the group. She stuck around.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're just as guilty as they are, because people who see evil and do nothing about it are just as evil as the people committing it.
Yeah.
But she got hit by the tow truck. She got pinned under the gate and watched her friends die. And then... while she's laying there screaming and crying, Corey comes up and stomps her head like a pumpkin.
Super satisfying, but it's just like...
I was like, oh, that was actually kind of sad.
Yeah. And then there was the nice little nod to, I believe it was Halloween 2, where, because like Corey comes around the corner with the wrench, and in Halloween 2, Michael breaks the glass... where the nurse, when he steals the car, I forget.
Oh, Marion.
Marion, thank you. So when he breaks the glass, like, I guess they had a wrench in his hand, and that's what made it shatter the glass. It's a real quick shot, but it's just, I think that's what it was told that it was. So it's like, it was kind of like a nice little reference for him to use the, yeah, for him to use the wrench on one of the kids. So
yeah, so he clubbed her over the head, killed her. A good number of the kills were either off screen or cutaways. I don't know if it was because they were kind of going back to the idea of the Carpenter original where the deaths were cleaner or off screen, or it just wasn't a very bloody movie.
There was,
especially after the Carnage of Halloween Kills. Was that the thought process?
The Carnage of Halloween, I think Halloween Kills was definitely a lot more violent, but like going back to like Halloween 18, there was a, like we mentioned
that
in
was
our,
brutal
our
thing, too.
It was brutal, but everything was off screen. So it was,
they kind of went back to that. Like
yeah.
there was a bit of on-screen carnage, but most of it was done in cutaways.
You want to know what I have for as I'm sitting in the theater, like I'm thinking of this. I'm like, because I'm noticing that, like, after the kills of the band kids, I was just like, this is like some of the first like really intense kills that we've gotten in this movie, besides the doctor thing. And I was like, and that was pretty type of thing. My analogy for this, for Halloween, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, it's a soda bottle.
What do you mean?
So you take a soda bottle, right? You have a Dr. Pepper or a Coke, whatever soda you want, right? That's Halloween 18. Halloween Kills, you shake the shit out of it.
Yeah. And then it goes flat.
And then you just put it down, and that's Halloween Ends. There's shit going on inside it. You don't want to open it up, but then it just goes flat. And it just calms down. It's changed inside. But that's kind of how I saw it. It was just like, you have something that everybody knows, and then you shake it up to the point where, no, I don't like that.
It's chaos.
Even though it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to see it explode. And then they just set it down and then you just walk away.
And it never explodes.
And it never explodes. And that's where I think a lot of people, like, and like I said, I had that analogy while sitting in the theater. But then after watching that guy's review on YouTube where he was just, I'm just let down, that's what it was. It's
when you finally crack the soda bottle to get what's
just
inside, it's flat.
Yeah. And that's where it's just, it's unsatisfying, but at the same time, it's...
Or,
there.
Let's use a sex analogy.
Why?
Because we're adults. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, I thought I had a good one.
No. So 2018 was the foreplay. It's really, really good. It gets you warmed up. You're primed. You're like, all right, I can't wait for what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
And then Halloween Kills, you're starting to get into the action. It's a bit chaotic. The kinks start coming out. It's like, all right, here we go. And then you don't come in the end. And
ooh,
that was Halloween Ends.
Oh, that's saucy. Mm. Chick-fil-A sauce. Mm.
No.
So.
What? I'm not here to kink shame. However, that would not be my choice because that would make the sheet smell real bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's not, I don't know from experience or anything, but you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saucy. Anyways. But that's how I saw the movie was, it was just, or at least this trilogy, is that it set you up for something that was really good, and then it went chaotic in the middle. It was still interesting, and it was, you wanted to see it, and then when it got to this, you got something completely different, and it felt flat because you're giving something like that you weren't really expecting.
Well, I think that's where this movie suffers a bit too, is that you have Halloween and Halloween Kills take place in the same night. They feel like they're part of the same universe.
Yeah,
like these feel like those two films feel like they go together. Halloween Ends, and I don't know if it was because they had to sit on the script. And they decided to make last-minute changes before filming because of COVID. Like, filming got pushed way back because of COVID. And then the release date got pushed back because of COVID. Did they get cold feet on something? Was it supposed to be different? I don't know. But Halloween Ends doesn't feel like it's a part of the trilogy. It feels like its own thing.
Yeah.
And that, which is fine, I guess, but it's been hyped up to be the punctuation mark at the end of this sentence.
And that's where I felt that this was what I think John Carpenter wanted as that anthology, where it now you could take it in that direction of evil can take different shapes. And that's where, but to have it as your final, the end, like the punctuation mark, as you said, it's like,
it's an ellipsis. It's not a period.
Yeah. And as horror fans know, if this is the end of Michael Myers, I will be plumb surprised.
How in the fuck, outside of doing another reboot, how are they going to resurrect this one? They threw him in a car chipper. Like, they threw him in a, I mean, I guess it's a combine.
Yeah.
It's not really a compactor. Is it a compactor, I guess? No, because compactor squish.
No, it's, yeah. It's, they threw it's, him in a fucking, it's a grinder.
Yeah, they threw his body, Michael's body, in a fucking grinder. He was pureed. There ain't no coming back from that.
Yeah.
Like, Allison said it at the end. Like, when Hawkins came in and went, oh, Michael's dead. And she goes, not dead enough. Like, that was David Gordon Green, Danny McBride, John Carpenter. That was all of them going, this is going to end. We are not leaving this open-ended for some backdoor bullshit sequel. We are going to make sure it's finished. And honestly, the way Michael went out for me was pretty satisfying. But I wanted the focus on Laurie and Michael and Allison. Allison was the expected final girl. She was the one who we've all been talking about as potentially stepping up and taking the place of Laurie Strode at the end of this. If Laurie were to die, Allison makes sense. Allison would work. But the focus was taken off of all three of those characters, put on a brand new one, which in another movie would have been fine. But that's not what's going on here. This felt like the beginning chapter of a new series.
The interesting dynamic between Laurie and Allison really was the fact that it was a 4-year gap. So between Halloween and Halloween Kills, those are literally,
it's the same night.
Same night. So you're getting that intense just battle mode of the girls. Now it's 4 years later. Lori has kind of given up on that backwoods survival life. Allison is also in that mode of rebuilding her life and continuing on and being happy and just doing all that other stuff that she needs to do to a degree. And then so seeing the dynamic of where Lori isn't fully prepared to see Michael. She's kind of returned back to a little bit more of a vulnerable state. She still has the fight, and I love that in that last little scene. Granted, we're watching two old people fight. So it's like there was other people like, oh man, the fight scene was just so like not satisfying. It wasn't epic.
It was,
epic.
Two,
and I was
it
like
two people in their 60s having a fight.
I was like, what else? I was like, you can't have them do like these crazy big bumps and everything else. I was like, what are you going to, I mean, yes, would I want to see it? Hell yeah. I mean, fucking Mae Young can take a bump off the, you know, the table.
Into a table in her 80s?
Into a table in their 80s from the Dudley Boys. And it's like, I mean, granted, it's like, yeah, it's like I would love to see Laurie Strode, you just fucking go all ham hog. But I mean, at the same time, the fight that they had, I felt was enough. It was still,
it
was still there.
The fight would have been enough if the buildup leading up to it was better.
Yeah.
There was no buildup to it. It's just like Michael somehow followed Corey to Lori's new house and went, oh.
Oh, it's you.
It's you again. And then that's when the showdown happened. And it feels really clumsy, too, because in Halloween Kills, we got the whole story of finally it's like, he's not after Lori. So it makes, after getting that revelation put out there, it makes even less sense. The only reason why we as fans want to see the final showdown between Michael and Laurie, because it's been 40 years and several different iterations in the making. That's the only reason why we want to see it. Let's put a fucking bow on this thing and go out with a bang. And that's not what we got. Like, the fight was satisfying. The conclusion was satisfying. The whole shit with Michael was satisfying. If the other hour and 30-ish minutes of the movie, the first hour and a half, was actually the build-up to that. That's not all we got. And it was mostly Lori's conflict with Corey.
And that whole scene was the gotcha moment, where there's a lot of really emotional build-up. Allison just got done giving Lori the business and telling her how, like, terrible she is, and that after Lori tells Allison that she can't go with Corey and all that mess, and then it becomes this thing where it's too much for Lori. She's drinking, she's looking at her book, and she ends up making a call to the police, reporting a suicide. She grabs her gun, and it is deep. It is really, really hard to watch. And then all of a sudden, you hear the shot, and then you see the pumpkin on the ground, but you get the hand that opens up the door, and then you get the shot that we got from the trailer of her holding the gun out, doing the whole gotcha, bitch.
Corey takes two in the chest, not Michael.
And that's where it's, for me, it was, I was okay with it, but it's one of those, it's like, I paid the ticket to see, like, it's on the fucking poster cover of the two of them. It's like, I want to see that.
That was the big advertisement. Yeah. It's the final showdown with Lori and Michael. And I know we keep going back to this, but that's the biggest complaint, is in the trailers, Corey wasn't in the trailers.
Nope.
And if he was, it was for splashes. Like, there was no emphasis put on this Corey Cunningham character at all.
The other big problem that I had was Corey going down into Michael's Ninja Turtle lair and wrestling with the shape
to steal his mask,
winning, grabbing his mask off of his melon, and then walking right out in one shot. Right, like, that was a really cool, I will grant it, as for filming, that was really cool, just because
it was a single shot.
He goes in, grabs it, comes back out. And then Michael does his dead man Undertaker, just whoop,
the sit up,
and then the tilt. Now, and then that kind of leads.
And then he got real mad because he took his mask.
Yeah. The other thing, that mask, it is moldy. It is covered in blood. It is melted.
Smelly. I bet it's smelly.
What do you think Corey smelled when he put that mask on?
Oh, I don't even want to know. It was probably foul.
Like, it hit me. I was like, oh, that's gotta be just...
It's moldy. It's 40-year-old latex, for starters.
Yeah.
That's moldy and, decaying. And because latex is a natural material. It decays.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. Now that I'm thinking of it, why'd you put that out there?
Because it happened. Like, that was the first thing that I thought, is like, when he put that mask
Michael
on.
Michael lives,
like,
with it. Oh. Michael lives with it, so he's probably scent blind to it. But, Corey,
well, he's the shape. He can, if he could take a gunshot, he can take a smelly mask. But, like, that was the thing. So when he puts it on, when Corey puts it on, he becomes Michael. Like,
he's wearing the persona.
Yeah, he is Michael. And then when he gets shot by Lori, and he really gets taken out, he does again, he says it again, where it's, if I can't have her, no one can. And a little part of me was just like,
still doesn't make sense, because he stabs himself in the neck.
Yeah, but it's the whole thing of, I'm going to do to you what has been done to me. So I'm going to pin you as the murderer or the monster. And instead of that, because I think he knew that he was already going to die. And so it was like, well, let me just,
he he got shot in the chest twice. He was going to bleed out at any point, so let's just move this along.
Yeah.
But at that point, he was so far gone that him taking his own life really... Well, because the other part, too, is he heard Allison pull up, because she had the rattly muffler, because it wasn't attached all the way. He heard Allison pull up, and he called her and said, "Your grandmother's trying to kill me." So, no harm, no foul. It's not going to affect him, and he's dead.
Yeah.
But he can ruin Lori's life on the way out.
Yeah. And I like that little bit of a twist. However, to do this entire buildup of a character to sit there and then just dispatch him right at the end, it's all done, moving on. It's like they did the whole thing of there was the little bit of the psycho killer comeback, because he kind of came back too, but then that's when Michael grabbed him and then snapped his neck.
Yeah.
It was kind of like Michael was like, "Oh, no, I'm getting back at you. You betrayed me."
The way he stabbed himself in the neck, he should have bled out in like a minute or two. There shouldn't have been any strength left at all to reach up and grab Michael's. It was just trying to get one more scare in, one more jump scare in there. And like to try to, again, ham-fistedly to feel like this is the new Michael, or to make you think that maybe Corey will survive this somehow, and no, he won't. But like, that was kind of unnecessary. Like, just let the dead be dead.
Yeah.
And then we get into the final showdown with Michael and Lori. The way that she managed to take him out, though, was interesting. She, by pinning him to the kitchen island with the knives, and then she cut his throat. Well, she took the mask off. She cut his throat. And while she was running her mouth to him, he ripped his right hand, I think it was. And
he sliced it straight through.
He ripped it and then grabbed her by the throat with some strength, and Allison came in to save the day there. Allison broke his arm.
Yeah.
And then Lori cut his right forearm. You know, she went down the street with the blade there and held his hand till he bled out and died. Okay, that's fine. I was looking at that, and I was looking at all the injuries, and then I thought of you. And I was like, Craig should be happy with the continuity. He still only had 3 fingers on one hand. He was all burnt up. He had the milky eye from when he got stabbed in the eye with the clothes hanger. He had the scar on the neck from the knitting needle. Like, he got Lori with the needle. He retaliated
with the needle. He did get her with the needle.
Yeah, I think it was just under the ear. Mm-hmm. Like, in the jaw. He got her pretty good with that. Like, the fight was fine. I don't have any issues with any of that. It just wasn't enough. That's my biggest complaint, is it really wasn't enough. And the other one I had was the voiceover. Lori's, again, it was clumsy exposition at the beginning of the movie. I thought the line at the end of it where, I think I mentioned it before, where evil doesn't die, it just changes shape. I thought that was fairly poetic. For what it was.
Or there was the one where it's like you just got to go and find your own cherry blossoms. Because that was the thing that Frank was, since after his run-in with...
Yeah, is it suicide or cherry blossoms, I think the line was, which I thought was really funny. And it was the whole... And Allison packs up and moves away from Haddonfield, and Lori has that cute interaction with Frank where he brings her the vegetables because she didn't believe him when he said, "I eat vegetables," like, at the grocery store. Like, it was a cute interaction. I thought that was a nice way to tie it up, but...
Oh, and then she was like, "Oh, tell me again about those cherry blossoms," and like, he goes and sits on
the... Well, because the cherry blossoms, those are the first things to bloom in the spring. They're always a sign of renewal. They're very pretty. They're usually pink, so they're pretty innocent. They're signs of innocence and blah blah blah.
And then he wants to like go to Japan because he's been learning Japanese, and he just wants to get away from Haddonfield. And so Lori wants to go with him. And I think that again, the Frank and Lori thing was incredibly sweet.
It was very underdeveloped.
And
though.
Yes, I think it was fine for what it was, because if it's like if we would have gotten the Frank and Lori love story on top of Corey and Allison, it would have been a little too much.
Honestly, I think because we started the Frank and Lori thing in Halloween Kills, like, Let's develop that instead. And then, I don't know, maybe Corey was just being used as the vehicle to... That was the best way they could come up with to get Michael out of the sewer and back in Lori's house.
Yeah.
And rather than just sort of randomly making it happen. Like, I thought... Because... You always have, with these stupid time jumps in these movies, you're always sitting there going, but what have they been doing in the meantime?
Yeah.
And Michael just hiding out in a sewer for 4 years licking his wounds, it's kind of like, and eating rats, I'm guessing. That's the only way he stayed alive, unless he was picking shit off the homeless guy's cart that lived in the underpass. But, like, so that there's that question. What's he been doing?
Yeah, it's 4 years. I mean, yeah, it's like, granted... Yeah, he's been super injured, but it's just, it's not anything, that's been, like, detriment to the story of anybody. It's just there. And that's where little parts of me was, I felt like I would be more intrigued if all the shit that was happening around Haddonfield was Michael. It's like he just kind of came out every now and then and caused some shit and then went off. And it's like, and then everyone was just blaming everybody else.
That's not what we got.
No. It's like, I think more of the story was that shit was just happening in Haddonfield and people were blaming it on Michael. And it's just, it just didn't sit right with me as far as, I would have rather had that Michael just come out and be that killer, because in Halloween and Halloween Kills, he was just a ferocious just predator. And this one, he was literally just a decrepit man.
Yeah.
And in this one, it was the first time you actually saw his eyes. That was one thing, as you mentioned, with the continuity with the missing fingers and the they never showed his eyes when he had the mask on. And that is one of my favorite things about Michael Myers, is when they do not show the eyes. I want the black, solid, and that is it. Nothing else. And this one, when he grabs Corey by the throat and they're doing the whole eye connection thing, you could see just that glare and the glimmer. And this is one of the first times that they're really making it that Michael is just a man.
In this series.
Version,
yeah.
Yeah, in this trilogy. Yes, they have shown him without the mask, where it's just the back of his melon, and you can see where he's just a man, but it's when he has the mask on, he is the shape. He is the apex predator killer, and it's just... there's just an uncontrollable evil. But in that moment, you could see that there was just a man behind the mask. And it kind of made Michael feel more vulnerable and more... It just kind of weakened your character.
And I think, yes, but I also think people need to remember that this is supposed to be a brand new timeline and a brand new iteration of the character. Up until this point, we had been getting somebody who was basically supernaturally human. Like, he was above human. Because of the punishment he's been able to take. And I think one of the mistakes the fandom is making is they're not putting aside the fact that this isn't the Michael Myers we've known since 1988. This is not the one. He was human in 78. He was just a man. He's a man who somehow survived several gunshots, but he was still just a man. And now he's a man with some age on him. And now he's got a lot of mileage on him because of the injuries. So it's like, you gotta put aside the fact that this is not the same character. This was never the same character in this iteration of the Halloween series, in this particular trilogy. So I think that is a mistake that the fandom has been making, if I'm looking at that.
And, well, no, you are correct. Is the fandom, like I was mentioning with that guy that did the review, where he was like, I'm feeling insulted because I was just not given anything. It's like, he's like, I didn't even really like particularly like Halloween Kills very much, but they also made Michael actually a threat. And he was just this big thing, and all of a sudden now you just, as I said, you diluted him.
They stripped that away from him in this movie. I'm ready to get my skull rating. Yeah.
There's nothing else you wanted to talk about at all? You good to go?
I don't know if there's anything you can remind me of, but I feel like we hit all the important parts that I wanted to hit. All
right, well, if you're ready to go, let's go.
I'm going to preface this by saying that as a standalone movie, like just as its own entity, Halloween Ends, I liked it fine. Like it's fine as a movie. There's nothing like, yeah, it's a bit clunky in some places and the exposition was unnecessary, but as a movie, it's fine. As the finale of a trilogy, they fumbled the catch. Like they really, it just... Why? Like, there's so many things, like, that I question in it. And initially, when I first walked out of the theater, I was feeling pretty good about it. And I was thinking, I was like, no, I think I'm pretty... But then Friday, it was streaming on Peacock. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch it again and see, just to make sure.
Oh, you watched it twice.
I did watch it twice. Okay. I told you that. So I watched it again Friday afternoon. And... I saw some stuff, and that was when I started noticing the problems. Because, like, the first time, it was just sort of get the feeling. And then the second one was watch it with a more critical eye, because this isn't a film we've ever seen before, because it's brand spanking new. So with the critical eye, and then us discussing it here, and kind of picking things apart a little bit more, I'll probably watch Halloween Ends again. I think this is one that further on down the road will probably get a reevaluation once all the knee-jerk reactions calm down. As being a pretty good film within itself. However, because this is the end of a trilogy, and this was supposed to be the wrap-up, and they, David Gordon Green and Danny McBride and the other writers didn't exactly do that, and they were trying to introduce too many new elements in the third act, I had to dock it some serious points just for the story. So it's 2.7.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to rate... Initially, I rated it a whole lot higher. It was, like, a 3.7. And then I started kind of looking at it a bit more critically, and I was like, no, you don't do that in the third act of a story. You don't do that stuff. So, on its own as a movie, I would probably say it's a 3.7, but considering what it is meant to do, and it doesn't do that particularly well, it's a 2.7 for sure. Which makes me really sad because I did go in cautiously optimistic. I tried to manage my expectations. I'm not mad about seeing it. There's just those little disappointments. And I'm not going to be like some of the psychos online going, it's an abomination against God. I honestly think John Carpenter probably consulted a bit. I would imagine, and I'm assuming here, I'm just speculating, but I'd imagine he consulted a bit on this. And he's like, let's wrap this up. Because there is no reason for this movie series to have gone on anywhere near as long as it has. And so, he did it. I liked that we did get a finale, and there was a conclusive end to Michael Myers. That, I'm grateful we got. The fucker got put in a combine and ground in a hamburger meat. Like, Michael Myers is dead. And that alone was worth the price of admission, to see Michael Myers finally fucking die. You can't resurrect this one. You can't bullshit your way out of it. He did. So, that was fine. But for all the reasons we talked about for the last hour and a half, it's a 2.7.
Nice.
Okay. What about you?
So, before I jump into my skull rating, I need to talk about my...
You gotta get something off your chest?
My adventures in actually going to the theater. So, I went at 7 o'clock to the XL showing. Paid my ticket, got my seat, and like, I don't know if your movie theater, though, I know you went to the same movie theater I went to, but it's like every movie theater is now doing the assigned seatings. So when you buy your seat, you have to pick your seat and then go from there. So I picked my seat dead center in the theater. I was super happy about it because that's like my prime location whenever I go to a theater. So I get in. I'm actually there a little bit early. I sit down. I'm like the only person in this theater. All of a sudden, this lady comes in. The weird little advertisements are still going on. Mm-hmm. And she walks right into my aisle, walks right up to me, and she goes, "You're in my seat." And this very, like, Karen, just angry way, like, "You're in my seat." And I could have started to pop off.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff. But I was just like, "Well, what's your seat number?" She's like, "Oh, I'm in H13. He's like, and I go, "Oh, well, this is J13. H13 is right in front of me. It's one aisle up." And the guy that she was with, like, kind of looked at me. He was like, "Oh, shit. Like, we really fucked up." Like, and so they just didn't.
She was about to go full camera.
She didn't say anything. She just turned around and walked all the way down and didn't. And that, like, that was it. So I was like, "You know what? I'm just going to let it go." It's like, it doesn't matter. It's whatever it is. And then, so the movie starts up and we see the fucking cool ass Black Adam trailer. Oh, and then the fucking trailer for Megan.
That's creepy.
Like, it's like a weird bigger version of Chucky, but like with a Scarlett Johansson looking.
She's an AI learning doll.
It's creepy. I was like, that looks fucking creepy. So I'm excited for that just to see how that pans out. But the trailer goes on. And it's just about to start the movie. And then out of nowhere, this group of, I guess, middle schooler to, like, young freshman high schoolers, they come in, and they are loud as shit. And they sit down, and they all will not stop talking. Ugh. The movie starts, and they are literally right behind me. And they're talking about who is, like, they're texting each other on their phones, so you can see the lights flickering, and then they're jabbering on about some girl named like Brianna or something like that.
Oh jeez!
And I'm like, and that's where they're not talking about the movie, which actually hasn't even started yet.
And they're talking about their own bullshit.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my god! And so at one, like, so it was right after the scene when the kid takes the tumble off of the banister at the beginning of the movie, and Corey gets blamed, right? So the kids start keep talking, and it's ruining that moment for me because it was a big jump. I was like, "Oh my god!" And the kid just died, and the kids behind me are still jabbering on.
Oh god!
So I turn around, and I was like, "Are you gonna fucking talk the whole goddamn movie?" And the kid behind me, again, I'm 36. This a literal kid, like a middle schooler. He just went, "Oh shit!" Like, big man. Like, I mean, I know I'm not that big, but it's like I sounded a lot bigger than what I look like. And so he was just like, "Oh shit!" The guy next to me, I turned around and looked at him, and he's like, "It's okay." And I was like, and so I got upset. I grabbed my popcorn. I got up and I went to the front counter and asked to see if I, you know, could go for the next showing. Ended up going into the next showing, right? Same thing. I get into the theater a little bit earlier. I'm the only one in there. Well, strike that. There's a couple people that are sitting a little bit further back. But I go to my seat in the middle of the row, right? I sit down. The movie is about to crank up. And this dude walks in my aisle, walks past me, like he like does that weird awkward shuffle thing where you do like the ass, like you try to, you know, squeeze by. So he squeezes by me and then walks by, walks down a little bit, and then walks back and sits his happy ass right next to me. There is nobody within like four rows. You could sit anywhere. I don't care if they're assigned seating, but I'm like, this fucker sat next to me. So I made a friend. His name's Trevor. Like, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, and this dude, he brought his own popcorn. I brought my own candy, which is I'm okay with. But no, this fucker popped his own popcorn at home, put it in his book bag, which I was surprised that anybody let him in with a book bag in this day and age in a movie theater.
Yeah.
Like, that was, I was like, okay, I'm here to see Halloween and
probably
now,
die.
Now I'm gonna, what's your name? it's like, oh my God. Like, so yeah. And on top of that, he ate his fucking popcorn like a fucking racehorse. He's just like scarfing it down. Like he just like
chewing cud.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my shit. If I have to, I was like, you know what? I'm not moving. Nope. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to move again. I was like, this is a miserable fucking time. I'm not doing it. And the funny thing was, like, so Trevor was brand new to the movie. He's never really watched, I could tell, he's never really watched Halloween before. Because, oh, like, God. Like, most of the stuff that, like, one thing that he said that it was funny because I had the exact opposite reaction is when Corey takes the mask off of him in the turtle lair, and then he walks out the sewer drain, and then Michael sits up. He goes, I want to see your face. Let me see your face. Me, I said, I don't want to see his face. I never want to see Michael's face.
No, this movie did a great job of keeping his face pretty well hidden.
Yeah. Even, like, after, like, Laurie takes off the mask and then she slits his throat.
Yeah, you just saw the one side. It's yeah. Weird.
That's all I want. I don't want to see his face. I was like, I was so happy that they did that. And it was just funny because I had to, like, it was weird having that different reaction to Trevor. And then at the end, when they put him in the meat grinder, and he just goes, wait, so he's dead? Like, he turned to me, he hasn't said a fucking word to me the whole night, and then he goes, wait, like, so, like, that's it? And I'm like, oh, yeah, until the studio needs more money. Like, then they'll bring back, they'll do something else with him.
They'll bullshit
like,
their way back
I was like, yeah, it's like he's, I mean, I was like, I don't know if anybody else could come back from a meat grinder. So I was like, and he's no. Like, oh, but like, and I could just see this defeated face where he was just like, he didn't know how to react, but at the same time, he's also probably that person that has never really watched the amount of Halloween movies that we have
and
spent that much time with this character as much as we have.
All of years?
Exactly. So
this, he doesn't know there's 40 years build up behind this.
Probably. And that's where it's an interesting dynamic. But I also have to say that my time in the movie theater, COVID has ruined my movie-going experience forever.
You just don't ever want to go back?
If I could just watch if the movies at home, I do not need to go to a theater.
Ever again. Yeah.
I was like, I will be so happy just turning up my volume a little bit louder than normal and just sitting down in my own comfy couch, not dealing with anybody else's bullshit.
Even with like the premium streaming experiences where like, what was the one? Oh, Trolls World Tour had come out during COVID and our daughter wanted to see it really badly. And so we ended up,
I wanted to see it really badly.
I was trying to do you a favor, but okay.
Fuck that. That's a great movie. I love that movie.
But it was $20, and you got it for 2 days. I think she ended up watching it 3 times. We got our money's worth.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, even for a premium streaming experience, for the $15 or $20 or whatever, and the whole family can go, Curtis and I went. We spent almost $50 between 2 tickets and then, like, a popcorn combo. It was 46-something. It was like 46.80 something when all was said and done. And I'm like, and then I found out while we were in the theater watching it in the trailer, one of the trailers that come on, it's like, oh, it'll be streaming on
Peacock. Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't think it was going to be streaming on Peacock for a couple of weeks. No, it was being released same day.
Same day. Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, the fuck did we spend $50 for?
Exactly. It's like when Peacock is what? Like pennies? In comparison?
Comparatively, yeah. I think it's like $7 a month.
$7 a month and you can stream it as many times as you want.
Yeah.
Until they remove it. It's kind of like with like the HBO Max stuff.
It's Universal.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, but with like the HBO Max, I remember, so the first movie that I went to go see after COVID was Mortal Kombat. Because I am a huge Mortal Kombat guy. And that was the thing, is like, I went with my buddy, and it was still kind of the same experience where it was like way too expensive for just for that whole thing. Because then, like, the following like week, they had it on HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. I was like, I ended up watching it.
Yeah, I was like, why didn't I just do this?
Well, I needed the big screen.
Yeah. So I mean, I understand, like, there are some things where it's like you definitely need that big screen experience. Like one of the movies I say that needs to be seen on big screen is like Tron 3D in 3D. The Tron Legacy. It's just there, all the light.
Anyways,
that was my story, and it really irritated me. And Trevor, if you're listening, kisses.
I miss you
so much, Trevor. So I'm gonna be thinking every time I watch a movie, man. What's Trevor doing right now, man?
Chomping popcorn.
That horse
mouth. What are your final thoughts on this?
Okay, so back to my skull rating on this one. I was kind of in the same boat that you had. I liked it. It's funny, I sent you a text message like, oh, the movie's over, and I messed up the emoji. I gave you the cringe face, and I meant to give you the smile. I was like, I actually liked it. I'm not a Halloween fan. I have my big discrepancies with it, but with this new trilogy, I've now since come to like it, like, or appreciate it a whole lot more. And so as I'm watching this, I had that realization that this is kind of what I felt John Carpenter would have wanted, as to have that the trilogy, or like the movie continuation, yeah, of whatever, what, like, so it could be anything,
whatever
for Halloween.
The original plan was.
Yeah. However, there are things about it that really fall flat for me. I do not like the twist of adding the character, and just late in the game. It's just, I kind of feel like you should have introduced him earlier on, and then...
So we're on the same page, pretty much.
Yes, yeah. 100%. And that's where... However, there was things about it that I did find very enjoyable, as far as seeing the vulnerable side of Lori, and just how happy she was, and then just the back and forth with how it wasn't... It's like, now that Michael's gone, it's like the monster that she's dealing with is Haddonfield. And I like that twist, where it almost feels like it's like a Stephen King thing, where it's Maine. Maine is the problem. Or it's like H.P. Lovecraft, where it's...
Rhode Island's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it's something, but that's just evil in the town, and it just... I like that they did have that type of dynamic, but... For my skull rating, I actually sat down last night and really did like some thinking about it, just because I did the same thing you did, where I started off like pretty high. And then as I started to think about it more and really kind of sit with it,
context is key.
It came down quite a bit. Like, I think I started off at like, I think it was like 3.6, and now it's like my final skull rating was a 3.1.
Yeah.
So it's not too far off from what you had, but it's like, I actually liked it. I would watch this movie again. There are, like I said, there are things about it that I did enjoy. If you kind of separated the whole Michael thing from Corey, that little premise was fine on its own. It's like, I did want, for the final... I wanted more out of Michael. More kills, more intensity, things like that. However, how fucking cool is it to fucking kill the radio DJ and then cut his tongue off and then have the record spinning around the tongue, skipping the song. And then Allison is listening to that radio station and she can hear the skipping. That's fucking cool. Like, so there's shit like that that I'm all about, or the shit with like the band geeks where, you know, you blow torch in the mouth, like.
Yeah, the kills were, you know, the kills were interesting. The special effects worked. It's just the story.
It's,
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like a trilogy, my analogy for the soda bottle thing, I think actually holds up pretty good in my eyes, just because it's like you got the soda, shake the shit out of it, and then you get something that's a little flat. It's still a soda.
Just not as good as it could have been.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard. However, in slasher fashion, most of the final films in a series or franchise or whatever you want to call it, they all tend to do that. Freddy's dead. Was it?
We don't speak of that anymore.
Sorry. She just gave me this look. But yeah, then you got, like, you know, for the Friday the 13th, you had, was it Jason?
Well, there was, well, in the,
Jason
and,
Goes to Hell.
And you're right. No, it wasn't Jason Goes to Hell. And you're right. There's a, when they, something is advertised as being the final something, and as a horror movie fan, come on, we know that's not true. But, like, Friday the 13th, the final chapter, we thought Jason was killed off definitively, and then they went back and did part 5 with a copycat, and the fans freaked the fuck out. So they literally had to go and resurrect him, Frankenstein's monster style, in part 6. Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, no longer exists. I'm done covering that movie.
Yeah.
I never want to see it again. But again, trash. That was supposed to be the final. Just whenever there's... Eventually, Halloween will be taken out of mothballs again. It'll probably be after John Carpenter dies.
Yeah.
The Universal, because the Akkads, Malik Akkad still technically owns it. He's one of the producers, or the producer. His dad, prior to that, had owned the rights, and then he had gotten them after that. But as long as Malik Akkad and NBC Universal own Halloween, eventually it's going to get dragged out of mothballs again. But for right now, it's done.
Now, the one thing as far as it being done, as you mentioned before, that that something that I really, really did like about it was that final farewell to Michael.
Oh, where Haddonfield.
Well, yeah. That, but it's, well, that's great. But, like, the thing with Lori and Allison, where Lori slits his wrist and then holds his hand.
Yeah.
It's very... I like that sentimental connection, where it's just, she's, it almost has that, like, that brotherly love kind of thing, where it, or that family kind of dynamic. It's just letting that, it's your time to go, it's okay, kind of, like, easing him away type of thing. And then,
well, when, like, he's the family's German Shepherd.
Kind of. I mean, if that's what she was doing in a way. She helped him out. And
well,
then,
she wasn't gonna walk away. She wanted to make sure his ass was really dead.
And that's where when they were like, oh, well, it's like he's dead, and she's like, nope, not dead enough. And then the sheriff gets out, and he's like, go ahead.
I'll allow it.
Let's do this.
Especially one of the deputies is like, this isn't how we do things. The sheriff's like, today it is.
Today it is. And then, so, I thought it was weird seeing them, Lori driving around with Michael on the top of the car, doing
it was
like...
Allison driving the car.
Allison and Lori in the car, with Michael on top, driving through Haddonfield in this
funeral, like, procession.
Yeah, like, so they were going through Haddonfield, showing off that Michael's been dead, and then the town... They pick him up, the town picks him up, in, like, concert style, and carries him all the way
over. Crowd surfs him to the front.
I was like, that's fucking crazy.
It was an amazing visual. It was a fantastic shot. I'm not going to take that away at all.
Oh, no, and it's, like, just the town letting go of Michael. Like, Michael Myers is finally gone, and then Lori pushing him in, and then seeing him ground up, like, Frank's beef that he was eating. And so I like that there was a this, like, I've always had this thing where it's like, how are you going to kill this ultimate evil? You push him in a fucking volcano. Like, you do it to where absolutely nothing can, you know, come back. And then
you watch to make sure the job gets done.
Yeah, and they did. They double tapped. I was like, that is exactly what they should have done at some point. It's like, either cut his fucking head off so that there is no way that he could come back. But in this one, it's like, oh, it's like they went above and beyond getting rid of Michael. So it's like, for me, as the final send-off for all that, it's like, that's the best way that they're going to have confirmation. And it's like, it's cool, but it's just one of those things where I wanted, as a fan, I wanted more out of it. Horror movie fan, not Halloween fan, but it's like, I wanted more, but I think it's because I got so much brutality in the last film that it didn't come over.
So. Yeah, so it gives you blue balls after that.
But I'm in for it. I will gladly own all three of these movies, and that is coming from a non-Halloween fan. I will gladly own these movies.
And I think that's why, because most proper Halloween fans are getting real cranky with this series.
Yeah.
But I don't care about that. So that wraps it up for Halloween Ends, and indeed, it was the end of Michael Myers.
Yeah.
As far as we can tell so far, because you don't come back from becoming Hamburger. But we will come back next week and do our final recap and ranking and overall thoughts on the whole series.
It's the reboot to the recap.
Right, because we did one a couple of years ago, but since then there's been two new movies and a whole lot of thought changes after going through each movie individually for the last couple of months.
And the funny thing is I wanted to do this. Like, I actually, the more I thought about it, like, especially last night after seeing this movie, I wanted to do a reboot and a rehatching, because this is a very interesting topic, and to have this big of a series of 13 movies is pretty intense. So it's like, I'm actually more intrigued to get into.
Yeah, this one, Halloween officially has become, with Halloween Ends, I think this one's become officially the biggest slasher series.
Yeah.
It finally surpassed Friday the 13th, because Friday the 13th had 12. But it's been in development hell since 2010, because it's been
in the courts. I think there's one that's in development right now.
No, it's still in the courts. Oh. Sean Cunningham and, I forgot the writer's name. The original writer. Yeah. The whole thing, it's just a shit show. I don't think we're going to be getting one I think it's dead to rights. I'm not even going to lie. If we get another Friday the 13th, I'll be fucking shocked.
Mm.
Pleasantly surprised, but I'll be shocked as fuck.
Okay.
So next week, our rankings, recap, blah, blah, blah. I've already said that. I'm not repeating myself.
it'll be a nice palate cleanser.
And then we're going to go and get into the Of the Dead series. Get those Romero zombie movies in for the end of the year. In the meantime, if you haven't gotten too pissed off and you've stayed with us this far, subscribe. Please, please, please. And we'll be in your favorite podcatcher every Tuesday on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher at Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. Our email is creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com. If you have any movie ideas, we've been kind of sketching out a schedule for a while just to get some of these franchises on paper. But, you know, everything's in flux.
Hey, and you know what? I still, like my good buddy Trevor, it's like I still want to just talk to you guys. So, hey, let me know what you guys thought of Halloween Ends, and email us, and like I said, just message us on Instagram. You're good to go.
Okay, great. And then merch, creepinitreal.cm, or I'm sorry, that's our email address. Our merch address is creepinitreal.redbubble.com. And get in on some of those holiday sales that are coming up here soon. Depending on when you're listening to this, just a reminder, there's always, every website has a Black Friday or Cyber Monday deal, so keep an eye out for that, and then feel free to get in on the merch train with a t-shirt or some, the Home Goods are really nice too.
Oh my god, they have so many sales, so yeah.
So
jump on that.
And so next week, until next week, when we do the wrap-up, I'm Mr. Smeg.
I've been that good buddy Lunchbox.
And why didn't the bicycle stand up?
It did. It had a kickstand.
It was too tired.
Oh.